I'm Jacob Kimberg, and you're listening to Salty Cinema. My guest today is director Tim Kaye. Tim is a prominent commercial director with Bullet, a branded entertainment agency founded by the Russo brothers and Justin Lin, which represents some of the best filmmakers in the world, including John Lee Hancock, Dan Gilroy, Louis Leterrier, Peyton Reed, and Alan Taylor. Tim has also directed several shorts and branded content for Funny or Die. He is one of the funniest people I've ever met and also happens to be my cousin. Here is my conversation with Tim Kaye.
Documentary climate, because every documentary has some like crazy revelation or murder or, you know.
Yeah.
Did you see that Mommy Dearest on HBO?
No.
About the mom who was faking her kid's cancer?
No.
It's not a great documentary, but the subject material is crazy. I mean, But anyway, I think it's like Mommy Dearest, Dead Mommy Dearest or something.
Okay. We need to get into this. I don't want to take up too much of your time here.
I know you're a busy man. I'm sorry I had to push. No. It was like the one weird thing I needed to go in and clear up some paperwork. Dude, I have nothing happening, man. I mean, if you told me this was a 3-week phone call, I could make it happen.
I was looking at some of your recent stuff. Like, you're doing tons of stuff. You don't tell me all these commercials that you're doing. There's some cool stuff that I saw, the Audi thing and the Danny Trejo thing.
Oh, yeah.
That stuff looks amazing.
Thanks, man. I just did a Russell Wilson thing up in Seattle a couple weeks ago.
Cool.
I just came off a nasty stretch where I just lost everything. Like 3 weeks of like, because, you know, like every year I have to like double down and discipline myself and get more serious to get the work, you know, like I don't want to become less engaged.
Yeah.
Even though it just tears my soul out. So I spent like 3 weeks like trying to like buckle down and just like one after another. Just no. Like, all right.
Well,
guess I'll just sit here and sweat all summer.
Let's, I want to start by talking about, what you've seen recently. If there are any films that you have liked in theaters lately, because I feel like it's been a pretty awful year so far. There's only been a few movies that I've really enjoyed.
What is this interview about? What are we doing?
it already started. So my podcast. So I'm just doing interviews with Christians that are doing cool stuff in the industry. So you know, whether they make stuff that is, you know, explicitly Christian or not, I just want to talk to Christians doing cool stuff. So for you, you know, I think it would be cool to talk about your road to becoming a director, because it's interesting. And I know there are so many different paths to becoming a director, but you like really put in specific work and kept to a specific path that wasn't guaranteed to bring you to that position, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then want to talk about too, you know, what it's like in the commercial world and what you're, you know, plans are as far as transitioning into features, because I know you do want to do that, or
yeah,
TV or whatever could come next or continues to be a part of what you're doing now. But yeah, like I said, asking first off about any stuff you've liked so far in 2017. What have you been getting excited about?
Man, I don't watch enough stuff, I think is the blanket answer. You know, definitely on the TV front, I'm probably behind. You know, I go to the movie theater and try to support the industry, but, you know, the thing that came to my head when you asked about something interesting was probably like Black Mirror or something like that.
Okay.
Feels fresh and cool.
Yeah.
Get Out, obviously, was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me it was awesome because I felt like he's a good director and he was actually directing that film. You know, it wasn't, it felt like it was his. It felt like it was his voice and his humor, and it was visual and it was well done and the acting was great. I don't know. I was very impressed with it.
Yeah. Have you worked with him before?
No, I've been in close proximity, but we've never done anything together.
Okay.
I think Oz had a meeting with him a couple weeks ago about developing something.
Hmm.
That could have been a couple months ago now. I don't know. But I'm trying to think of what else came out this year.
What was the last thing you saw in theaters?
Wonder Woman, maybe?
Okay. What'd you think of that?
It was fine. You know, I don't really... It's hard for me to care about superhero stuff.
Hmm. I say the same thing, but I still go see all of them. And I don't... Every time I get out of it, I'm like, why do I keep doing this? Because I don't... It's hard for me to care.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an easy blockbuster. You know, it's an easy spectacle to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that had a ton of hype.
Right. Yeah. And well, that's the thing. Then I see the reviews and I'm like, oh, this one's different. I got to go see this one. But I feel like most of them get really good reviews now and they're still all the same. Is there anything unique about this one to you? I mean, I know it's directed by a woman. That was different.
I mean, I do think that there is a difference in seeing a woman superhero. I don't want to say that because I went with my girlfriend and it affected her to see a cool female role.
Mm-hmm.
So I know enough to know that I don't understand that, and that's great, you know, and that's exciting.
Mm.
I don't know if that type of movie is even the right venue for filmmaking. I'll be interested to see what the guy did with Thor Ragnarok. And I'll be interested to see what Coogler did with Black Panther.
Mm.
I think those are great filmmakers, but if those films are just the exact same as the others, you know, then what, you know, who cares? What are we doing?
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that, you know, I feel like that part of the world is sucking up all the filmmakers with promise.
Mm. Is it kind of like the way TV shows are where you have like a vision for a TV show and then different directors come in, but they're all kind of serving the one kind of...
Well, I don't know. Some TV shows, you know, like you can tell when a director's done something, done an episode, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe the showrunners are more open to the director kind of putting their spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, I should say full disclosure. My bosses are directing the Avengers movies and I went and visited that set 2 weeks ago.
That's cool. Have you discussed with them at all, like, thoughts on the genre?
Not necessarily. You know, we've talked briefly about it. They love it. You know, and obviously filmmaking on that scale is such a rare and unique opportunity. I think they love doing it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the best of the franchises running.
Mm-hmm. So let's, just so people know, so you are on the Bullet label. That's your management, right?
That's the production company that represents me for commercial work.
Okay, and the Russo brothers,
The Russo brothers and Justin Lin own that company.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I also read that they are starting a film production company as well?
Or they already have? Yeah, they're moving everything under that one umbrella. Okay. So there's currently three different buildings under construction downtown.
Oh, okay.
So they've signed a bunch of deals with Chinese investors and production companies, and so they're trying to build their empire, but it's still kind of in its infancy.
Hmm. So are you foreseeing opportunities for features coming through being in that label?
I hope so. You know, film or TV or something that's long form narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's always some attempt happening of developing or working on stuff. So just trying to find that best way to make it happen.
So you've been working on commercials for a long time. What, how do you feel about that work? And I know you want to do long form stuff, but is there something within the short form that you really like and find interesting?
I think the only reason I do it is because I do believe that filmmaking is a craft, and I think that you have to do it to know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to be able to, and it takes money. So to play with those tools and to learn how to work in that environment, you need to be able to do it. And that's what commercials are for me. It enables me to try out different things, to figure out how to work with a crew, how to spend money right, how to use a budget, how far you can push things. You know, and every job's different. So that kind of helps keep your skills sharp. With that being said, it's also a beating. You know, I mean, you're an employee. You're working for the agency and the client. So any, you know, delusions of creative freedom are probably inaccurate in the commercial world. But that's fine. I mean, it pays well and it gives me the opportunity to get better. So that's my main focus in doing it.
What was that first time for you like when you were in charge of a big crew on a big commercial?
Well, I kind of came up in it. You know, I'd been on set my whole adult life, so there was no trepidation about the actual physical presence of being on set with that many people. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's different to be in charge, but I was as comfortable as I could be being in that zone. And I had AD'd, you know, for a while, so the notion of being in charge is not something that I'm uncomfortable with. So It was relatively easy for me to step into that role. I mean, I think the difficulty, the learning and all of that is more in pre-production than it is, you know, on the day. Mm. You know, how do you communicate clearly with department heads? How do you figure out the best way with your producer to use the budget to your advantage and, you know, get as much production value on camera as you can? So, and the politics of the relationships with the agency and with the client and with your own crew and executive producers and producers, all of that stuff, you know, it's constantly a learning experience.
So do you think that when you go to direct something that is long form, that there'll be a lot of differences, or do you think it'll feel the same as far as that goes, just like how you work?
Well, I think it'll be different. I think the obvious ways it'll be different is that there's probably no way that, you know, I'll direct something that'll have the day-to-day budget that my commercials do. So everything will be smaller when I start doing narrative work, which is fine. That's fun. I don't think I worry about the day-to-day shooting. I think what I lose sleep over, or when, you know, when I think about what are my weaknesses or where does my inexperience lie, it's in the bigger picture, the broader structure of a movie, just to have something to talk about. The broader structure, the character development, how the plot moves. You know, can I make something that's interesting and will hold the attention of the viewer? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't worry about working with the crew or coverage or understanding the budget. You know, I mean, that all comes easy to me and I have a ton of experience doing that. I think that I do worry and want to be diligent and trying to learn and grow in kind of the bigger things that I think great filmmakers do, which is really understand their craft so well, like at the macro level, like knowing what a movie needs, knowing what their characters need, knowing how to move that story along and keep it interesting. And the great filmmakers, on top of that, they, you know, they've got that down, but then they, you know, bring their own visual style to it and they make it really stand out. And that's such a rare combination, I think. You know, I think that, you know, for instance, I think like Shane Black writes great movies and he understands those things. But to me, he's not a visual filmmaker. There's nothing intriguing about what his films look like or what he's doing as a director visually. He's a writer and the writing is great and the acting is great and they're fun stories. But I almost always walk away from his movies wishing that a good director had done them. You know, on the opposite of that spectrum, just to be obvious, is like a Michael Bay. It's hyper visual. Everything is cool, you know. But I mean, it could be in a different language and I would understand just as much about what's happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, the masters of the craft combine those two things. You know, a P.T. Anderson or someone like that is just as visual and has such a strong voice, but he also understands story. Of course, he's kind of gone off the rails and is playing with plot and character in ways that make his films, you know, almost a little bit more experimental, which is awesome, but it's a different thing.
In your commercials, do you feel like your personality or you have some kind of stamp on them that you feel like, oh, this is me kind of coming through?
Well, I mean, I think that a lot of that comes through in execution. I think that the commercials I do, I try to make them as visual and beautiful and cinematic as possible. And I think that that effort is seen on the screen. You know, I think there's a lot of directors that don't, and you can see that difference. I direct a lot of comedy stuff, so I do feel like, you know, I can bring stuff that I think is funny into the spot. And sometimes it survives the agency edit, but rarely. So yeah, I mean, I think that probably visually more my style comes through than the concepts or the dialogue, because those are things that agency creatives work for months on. So they're going to be precious about that and want those things to maintain all the way through the project. Obviously, that's what they sold their client, so that's the objective. So I think probably the biggest stamp on my stuff is just how I shoot it and what the visuals look like. Mm-hmm.
So is that the part that is kind of soul crushing for you, is that the agency has the control to kind of take the heart out of, or the things that you thought were really cool out of things sometimes, or kind of make them lesser?
Well, yeah. But I mean, I honestly don't want to just dig on how I make my living, but you know, I think that, yeah, when any sort of creative process has to go through so many levels of approval, mm-hmm. and it's not just me, I think for everyone involved, you know, I my heart goes out to agency creatives. You know, I have to work on a project for a couple of weeks. They spend months and are constantly trying to get the stuff sold to their client, or constantly having to pitch, and are constantly taking notes from a client that, you know, probably doesn't get it or doesn't fully understand their humor or whatever. So, mm-hmm. so they're fighting the good fight. I come in at the end with whatever they've gotten approved and we shoot it, you know? So I definitely, you know, feel for them and the process they have to go to. And it's amazing that anything good gets made, you know, just 'cause it has to go through so many rounds of approvals and whatnot. So
yeah.
So, you know, anytime that there's that many cooks in the kitchen, it's going to be a tough process, but you know, by no means, I mean, I'm not, you know, roofing in the summer. I mean, my job is awesome.
Yeah. Well, let's go back and kind of track how you got to where you are right now. Growing up, what was your interest in film?
Zero.
And why?
Is that the answer you wanted?
Why was that?
No, I just, it wasn't on my radar. I mean, I liked movies. I liked TV, but, you know, and I came up in a creative family. You know, I played music growing up and did a bunch of musicals, and you know, there was always a creative spirit to my family.
So what did you see for yourself? What did you want to do?
I mean, I went to college, you know, I went to a Bible college to, you know, if you would have asked me when I was 18, I would have said, you know, maybe I'm going to be a preacher, but that wasn't ever really in my heart, I don't think. And definitely being at that school was not right. So 2 years into it, I dropped out and went to film school. So I guess it was the summer after my freshman year that, you know, a buddy was editing and, you know, digital filmmaking was kind of coming into the, was, you know, prosumer stuff was very accessible, kind of. I mean, it was still expensive. This is summer of 2001. Mm-hmm. You know, so we had like an XL1 and I can't remember what the editing software was called, but we played around all summer and, you know, I felt like it came naturally to me. I liked doing it. And then when I went to my sophomore year of college, you know, and the full disgruntlement settled in, I applied to LA Film School out here in Hollywood, and I got accepted. Anyone would get accepted that gives them a check, so that doesn't mean anything, but got accepted, moved out, started fall of 2002 there, and that kind of was an introduction into the world.
So obviously there's, I don't know what it is that makes people think that they can do this or gets them interested. You've just felt like it was a natural thing when you were doing it, you really enjoyed it, and because you had never been exposed to it before, you never really knew that that was even a thing.
Yeah.
Was there anything else like in you or ideas, or it wasn't really stories that you wanted to get out or anything like that? It was just, this is kind of fun.
I mean, I think there's a constant comparison happening. I mean, I don't know what it's like when you talk to other filmmakers or when you talk to other people, but for me, like, my whole life is thinking, man, I probably have a better idea than that guy. Or I could tell that in a better way. Or, you know, when I went to films, when I started becoming more aware of films and really watching a ton of stuff and, you know, getting really involved in it, you know, you start to build confidence. I think I can do that better, and I think that I have ideas that are different. I think I might be seeing this in a different way, you know. But it's crazy. I mean, it's, you know, 15 years later and I'm still trying to get some of that out. You know, I'm still fighting that fight.
Yeah.
And I guess the struggle, you know, with the commercial side is that it's for all the opportunity and greatness that's there, it's still not the art that I want to be making. So, you know, I think that's where it feels a little oppressive.
Yeah. That's what I think about, like, art being about expression, and just thinking about what you might have wanted to express. And it would make sense that if you're not getting to express that, is it, I mean, there's expression that has to do with the medium, but just apart from the medium, expression that you would like to make that you felt like with film, I can do this, I can express this.
Well, I mean, I think first of all, you have to be a fan of film, right? So yeah. I love what a good film can do. I love the power that it has. Mm. And I feel that way about art in general, not just film.
Yeah.
You know, so I want to engage in that. And I feel like that is, it's a power that I would like to learn how to wield, you know, and I agree with you. I think it's about expression. I don't have specific stories. I think that what more drives me is the authenticity of that expression. I don't feel like that many people do it. I don't feel like there's that many pieces of art that really express what the artist is going through and are reaching out to other people to try to, obviously that's all of art is that meeting of the audience and the artist. But so for me, it's less about a specific story and more about trying to achieve a level of expression that might be able to affect the world.
Do you think there's any correlation between what a preacher does and what a filmmaker does? Obviously, there are some other filmmakers who thought that they were going to, who went to seminary and then became filmmakers instead, kind of similar to what you're talking about. What do you think? Do you think there's anything there?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that the structure is the same. You know, the pulpit is different, but it's still a pulpit.
Mm.
Obviously, I don't think filmmaking is about dogma. I mean, I think it's about expression and reflection.
Mm.
I'm less concerned about telling people something. I'm more concerned about discovering and
exploring something.
Exploring what's happening in me.
Yeah.
And just putting that. And that's not specific to a genre or a story. That's just, you know, being aware enough of my own struggles and identity to try to tell stories that reflect that humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that can happen in a superhero movie or, you know, in a horror movie or whatever. I think just some sort of authenticity mixed with, you know, kind of bold original storytelling. I think that's where I want to be.
So talk about your experience in film school and what that was like for you.
I mean, film school was a disaster. You know, there was no theory or history at LA Film School. It was just practical, which was great. I mean, you're immediately on set. You're immediately thrown into a truck and trying to figure it out, which for me, that was great because I didn't know if I would even like it. I didn't know what it was. So, you know, I learned to love it while I was at film school. But there was no, you know, there wasn't like a teacher that I connected with that has mentored me. There was no philosophy. There was no grander vision. I mean, this was taking people's money who have failed at everything else in life and telling them they can be a filmmaker. So I have a certain amount of disdain for it. And also on the back end, just no job placement, which now that I know this business and I'm in it is ridiculous. You can find anybody, some, you know, an assistant or a, you know, PA job, something.
But it seems that there have been quite a lot of people who from there, or at least even in your circle, that have found success. You wouldn't at all attribute that to the school?
Oh, 100% would not.
Yeah.
The three people that I know that are successful from film school, and this is, of course, this is probably the same of any school. They were going to be successful no matter what. The school didn't bring that out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that I know that were successful were not like me. They had been educated somewhere else and used LA Film School just as a way to get to the West Coast.
Right.
One guy went to AFI after LA Film School. You know, the other guy was already a working cinematographer who had graduated from Columbia. And, you know, he already had a reel. So he came out here and just started working.
Hmm.
You know, he went to LA Film School when he had the time. But so, you know, and people that made short films that might have helped them there, you know, that's good. I wasn't one of those people. No, it was a shoddily run program. And I feel no need to defend it.
How do you feel about short film making? Is it something that you enjoyed when you did it or will consider doing again?
No, I've loathed it my entire life because I don't know what the point of it is. But I say that because now I'm changing on it and I'm currently trying to get something off the ground.
Hmm.
I think for me, The reason it changed for me is I've gotten a management company in LA. I had this production company. I have all these contacts and resources to help me take the next step. So for me, it's just a very practical tool. I need a piece of narrative work to go with all of my commercial work, just kind of as a package deal. Oh, this guy can do something cool.
Hmm.
So now, because I have people that can use it very directly as a tool to help me, my attitude about it has changed.
Hmm.
So I want and need to shoot something.
Yeah.
Just to help that process.
I've felt the same way about short films, but I've never really understood why I feel that way. Like, can you kind of, like, I know I don't like watching them, so I guess why would I want to make them if I don't like watching them?
Well, I mean, like anything, it's hard to find good stuff, you know. Like, I had my management company send me short films that had helped other directors get their first feature.
Hmm.
And these are decent pieces of filmmaking, but I didn't think they were great, and I definitely didn't think it was something that was out of my reach.
Was there anything that you saw that was kind of consistent between them that you could, like, pick up on and why they were successful with them?
I mean, I think they did well at some festivals. I think the only reason that I'm now kind of being interested in it is because I have people that can use it. And I'm sure that there was a similar experience for those filmmakers. And also, honestly, the films that I saw that had helped the filmmakers get made were not American. They were international films that those governments are helping them pay for.
Mm.
So that's a different world in and of itself too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, how do you get the money to make a short film? Who's going to pay for that?
And honestly, I don't think that short films don't make money. So just the very nature of our the market, that's not going to attract good filmmakers.
Mm.
Good filmmakers are making music videos and, you know, doing stuff that can get them out in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously I'm still a little torn about it. You know, do I spend a bunch of money and make a short film to give it to my management team, or do I do something else? I don't know.
Yeah.
Getting to the next phase of my career is the quagmire that I'm currently trying to figure out, struggling with.
What was your first job after film school?
It was a PA.
As a PA. So
yeah, on commercials.
And how did you get that first job?
I mean, this is the thing. Every step of this journey is like borderline miraculous. So, you know, it's not a trail that others can follow. I got a PA job because a family friend went to college with a woman that was producing for Spielberg in 2001.
Hmm.
I didn't know her. My parents didn't know her. The people that gave me her phone number hardly knew her. And it had been years since they had seen her. So I cold called her like an idiot. Her name was Bonnie Curtis. And it's funny, in hindsight, you know, I don't know why she didn't offer me a PA job. She offered me nothing. Like, literally, it was the weirdest phone call of my life. But right at the end of the phone call, she was like, oh, I met this woman at a party. I'll give you her number. Okay. So again, an idiot, I cold called this other woman, whose name is Jules Daly and runs RSA. She's Ridley Scott's right-hand woman and produces everything he does and is a total titan.
Mm.
Obviously, I never got a hold of her, but her assistant answered the phone. And I bugged her assistant for 3 months until she put me on as a PA and on a Sam Bayer Mountain Dew commercial with Tracy McGrady.
Mm.
And, you know, showed up to this massive commercial and realized I had no idea what I was getting into. And then spent the next 5 years driving trucks and being depressed about it.
So you put in the time as a PA, and I remember being there with you in California when you were doing that. During that time, did you see being a PA as a path to being a director, or was it this is the work I can get, so this is what I'm going to do?
No, I mean, that's why I like had my late 20s whiskey freak out. No, the PA is a path. It can be a path to nothing. If you're a hustler, it can be a path to any department you want to be in. And it's a great line of work if you, you know, have no ambition and want to get into it and find your niche.
Mm-hmm.
I was not that guy. So, you know, I literally had people I respected telling me that I was stupid for like 5 years for wanting to be a director.
Mm.
And I never moved on to any other department to make more money or make my life easier because I was just mad at the world. So I you know, PA'd until I was absolutely burnt out. Driving trucks, you know, just a set PA on commercials. So I don't know. I probably did like 1,200 days or something. Mm.
And then at some point you transition into doing a lot of work for Funny or Die. How did that come about?
Well, I did my whiskey freak out. I moved back to Dallas, lived with my parents. I'm probably 27, 28 at this point. I started making some weird art films in Dallas with some friends, tried to get back in a zone where filmmaking was actually happening, because mm-hmm. it was not happening while I was PAing.
Do you feel like it could have been, though? Like, would you have had any time while you were in LA to be working on stuff and you just weren't?
Absolutely, Jacob. I am the dumbest person.
But you just feel like you were too uninspired at that point?
No. The word is entitled, and I had to be beaten away from that. You know?
Yeah.
The white guy syndrome of thinking, oh, if I'm just like nice and funny, like all these doors will open. Mm-hmm. You know? So that, you know, that was kind of the lesson for me is, you know, I had to be beaten all the way down. I went to Dallas, started making some stuff, and you know, honestly, one of my best friends, like, we got to hang out and just encourage each other to be better and to have a better attitude and to stop saying no to things. And to, you know, one thing that came out of that that still sticks with me is like, if I'm not the hardest working guy I know, then how am I expecting to do anything in this business? It's so hard. There's so many people hustling and working every day. So if I'm not just the hardest working person in my friend group, then what chance do I have? What am I doing? You know?
Yeah.
So I think when I came back to LA in 2011, my attitude was different. Of course, all, you know, I was to some degree hopeless, and there's a courage that comes from that. You know, I had nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. I had a bunch of friends at Funny or Die, so I went there and started ADing, which was a thing that I always said no to and hated doing. But it came naturally to me, and Funny or Die didn't know what they were doing, so I, you know, was able to help them, and my friends were there. So started ADing. And then kind of slowly directing some stuff on the side, or, you know, Funny or Die had random projects happening that they needed somebody. And then when my friend started a production company in 2012, I just kind of got grandfathered in and hung out at the office every day and picked up whatever I could. And, you know, a year later had a Super Bowl spot. So that's not a normal path. Hmm. But for that small window of time at Funny or Die, it was really the Wild West. You know, they had a branding department and companies wanted to be on the website. So they're paying all this money to buy page space. And then Funny or Die would make video, you know, kind of branded content videos for them. So, like, my first commercial job was literally, you know, there was like 11 like Miller Lite scripts like laying on the ground in the office. I was like, who's doing these? It's like, oh, they suck. Nobody wants to do them. It's like, for me, the impossible task is directing a commercial. That's what I came up in. It's impossible to get on that radar, to get in that mix. And, you know, Funny or Die, these scripts are laying on the ground. The executive producer was like, oh, yeah, there's a call with the agency in an hour. And I took the call and, you know, directed all those spots, and it just kind of kept growing from there. But here again, it was just that attitude that I had to lose that entitlement. Like, literally, my career is just built off of saying yes when other people say no. Yes, I'll do it. You know, now, obviously, I had to do a good job at, you know, with those opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, it's a combined trajectory. There's being open to the opportunity. And then there's never striking out. That's the truth. You know, so I feel super blessed that those opportunities have come, and that I've worked really hard to make sure that I can benefit from them.
Did you feel like your time being an assistant director was very beneficial? Is that something that you would say if you want to direct, you should do some assistant directing?
I think it is beneficial. And obviously all of my set experience is what made me a good AD. So that's kind of a package question. Absolutely. I don't think there's anyone that's my age that has a better grasp of what's happening on set and where the money's going and how a schedule works. And it helps me. I'm never over budget and I'm never over schedule. You know, I know how it should go and I know what's doable and what's not. Now, directors that don't have that experience are fine. They just lean more on their first AD and producer to help them do that. As do I. You know, I mean, it's always a team effort.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe there's ways where it doesn't help me because if I had to be honest about myself, I would say that I'm probably too conscious of the money and the time. So I, you know, I lose a little bit of that style of director that just does whatever he wants, and probably maybe he gets better stuff. I don't know. But I also, I just don't come up, I didn't come up in that world. I never have enough money. I never have enough time. You know, I don't, I've never had like a luxurious setting where I can just impose my will and everyone has to do what I say. So I gotta stick to the schedule and the budget.
So after all those years of PAing on these huge commercials, and now you're directing those commercials, what does that feel like for you?
It's the best thing ever. And, you know, there, I don't think there's anything better than showing up on a shoot and seeing somebody that I PA'd with or a crew member that I know. Because the journey that I've taken never happens. I don't know another PA that's, well, no, that's not true. I know a couple. But they're my friends. You know, I mean, like, it's a small group of people that have broken through.
Yeah.
And I think that's super rare, especially to break through into, you know, legitimate big commercial productions. You know, and that was the cool thing, you know, the cool story that kind of encapsulates that is when my first day of PAing was at RSA, Ridley Scott's company, super, super bougie office in West Hollywood. You know, 21, I had no idea what I was doing, totally wide-eyed. And that's where my office is now as a director, is at RSA, you know, working out of that same cubicle.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So it's an amazing trajectory, and, you know, I feel super blessed to be where I'm at, but, you know, I still feel like only one step has been taken. The journey is 15 years old, but still very fresh. Which I think is what people don't understand. Like, it's not a sprint, you know?
Yeah.
I think anyone that's ever done anything good is probably has a decade of effort that you don't see.
What are your thoughts on the current state of the film industry and where it's heading if that sprint or that marathon is ahead of you and you're seeing where film will go and what place you'll have in it in the future? How do you feel about how it's looking?
Did you see that documentary Side by Side that Keanu Reeves made?
Yeah.
My favorite moment, and the thing I always go back to when someone asks me this type of question, is David Lynch got interviewed in that movie. And, you know, at this point, you're well into the movie, and, you know, even Keanu's rhetoric is all about, you know, how digital's ruining everything, and everyone can be a filmmaker, and it's all getting watered down, and there's just so much content, and, you know, all this stuff. And David Lynch is, like, the coolest person in the world. He's just sitting there with his legs crossed. And he says, how long has there been pen and paper? And how many great novels are there? I think a good idea will always stand out. I think a fresh vision will always stand out. I think right now that's probably happening more in TV. But I still think a great movie is an awesome thing. But that's what I hold on to. You know, and it goes back to the question you asked about when I very first started. Why did I think I could do it? And I still have that ego. I still think that I can say and do things that are better than everyone else. So, you know, my skin is thick and my ego is ridiculous. And I don't say those as negatives. I think that you have to have a little bit of crazy to fight this fight, you know. Especially when I say that I'm 15 years in and I've only taken one step. And I think that's true probably. And that's daunting and depressing in some ways. When I say that everyone has a decade of work you don't know about, I probably have just started that. I'm not counting my 20s of PAing. That's not work. That's me being stupid and struggling.
Yeah.
I'm saying now that I'm directing commercials and, like, you know, scratching and clawing to pay my bills and to try to, you know, take a meeting with a producer or, you know, write a short film script. I mean, I'm probably just now starting the decade of work that no one will know about. And then, you know, hopefully at the end of this decade, maybe I'll direct a movie that will, you know, mean something to somebody.
What's your favorite piece that you've done?
There's so few things I've... This is the crazy thing. There's so few things I've done that are mine, you know, even at this stage of my life. A couple years ago, I did a music video for this Australian DJ named Alice in Wonderland.
Did I edit it?
Yes! That's right, man. But... And I don't even know if that's good, but just the fact that it's my vision is exciting. You know, it was a great experience making that and working on it because it wasn't, you know, a beef jerky fart commercial. It was something that was my idea, and I worked really hard, and it was really ambitious for the money we had, you know. Mm. But there's a lot of commercials I like too, you know. I think that I've tried really hard to push every job that I do, you know, and I think there's some good results. You know, I think the Blake Griffin stuff is really fun and outlandish. You know, the Danny Trejo thing is fun, but it's different. I'm still just executing someone else's idea. You know, it's a different feeling.
Yeah.
It's not as rewarding.
The Super Bowl commercial that you mentioned, that would that still be the highest profile thing that you've directed?
Probably. Yeah.
Tell us about that. It was for Fox Sports, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you want to hear about the panic attack I had after the shoot?
Yes, I do.
Anything that you want to make is going to be crazy. So every rogue element ups the anxiety factor. You know, and that one had a million rogue elements. The client kind of wrote the spot and came to us directly. I was at Gifted Youth. This is Funny or Die's commercial production company. It was just a very stressful shoot. The head guy at Fox wouldn't budge, and I wouldn't budge on some things. And I mean, to me, that's not a commercial that makes any sense. You know, you can go watch it. Like, why does Gary Payton have a picture of himself on his back? I have no idea. You know, And no one has any idea. You know, this is how commercials work. People want to try to do goofy stuff that's in like the Old Spice vein. Mm-hmm. And they don't realize that there's a certain genius behind that to make it coherent. And Andy Roddick with a fern strapped his back. I mean, it makes no sense. You know, and all I'm trying to do is to help it make sense. You know, I mean, you're just fighting to do it, and you still have to pull this crazy shoot. You know, we shot at the atrium at the top of a skyscraper downtown. You know, just the logistics of getting that golf cart up there would give you a panic attack. You know, so a week after the shoot, we finally finished it. It was a total, you know, disaster. You know, I'm having a whiskey with some friends, and I couldn't catch my breath.
Why?
I think I was having a panic attack.
But you were already done with it. What were you panicking about?
Jacob, let me tell you something about anxiety. In the moment, you're in survival mode.
Right. Okay. So it's,
you know, so yeah. there's not a spare second to, I mean, if you think about the anxiety or that none of it, you know, that you're going to die, you'll never survive it. You know,
have you ever experienced that directing anything else?
Definitely not to that extent. And I thought I was fine on the shoot. You know, it wasn't like it was a crazy shoot, but yeah, you know, I mean, it was just, is what it is. I don't know if there was a, I didn't go to a doctor or anything.
You said now you're, you know, trying to figure out what that next step is and trying to make a transition. Do you think that you'll continue to direct commercials even when you are doing the longer form stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I think the reality of trying to make movies or TV, and this isn't just me guessing, I have friends that are further along this process than I am, is I'm not going to make any money doing that. Mm-hmm. If I do a movie that's 2 to 5 million, that movie happens because I, you know, either I get DGA minimum or I take nothing at the front. Definitely nothing that I make myself is going to, I'm not going to pay myself to make a short film or to develop something. Mm-hmm. So I think part of that hustle is, well, and this is why I put so much energy into the commercial mechanism, is if I can get that machine going, which it is currently, then that will provide for me while I, you know, spend the next handful of years trying to get that next project off the ground. Mm-hmm. Assuming that I'm not, you know, it's a labor of love. I'm not going to make any money doing that. Hmm. Now, that's not the only way. You know, I don't know. You know, maybe I'll get attached to some movie and, you know, make some money or whatever. But, but if, you know, if I want to make what I want to make, it's going to, you know, the hard times are ahead of me, not behind me. So I will always keep the commercial thing going. I think it keeps me sharp, like I said before, and, you know, provides for my life financially.
Do you think the long form stuff that you really want to make would not really fit into the studio system, or do you think it could?
You know, I don't want to say that. I think that my a guy that I like in this vein is like Aronofsky. I think he's one of the best filmmakers that we have. You know, he's always got his name in the hat for some weird superhero movie. You know, obviously there's always creative differences because he's not going to work with stupid people. But I like his attitude toward the industry. You know, I'm not going to, you know, turn my nose at stuff and, you know, sit in my room and not do anything. You know, I want to tell stories and I want to make movies, you know. And obviously I think the older I get, the less precious I am about that. I want to play the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would like to make stuff that's very personal and is mine. But I'm not going to, like, turn down a meeting for some other scripts or some other thing. Mm-hmm. Obviously everything has to work and it has to be good enough for me to be interested in it and want to spend a few years on it. But, you know, I would love to make a great studio film, you know. And it's encouraging, you know, since I've, you know, kind of gotten this management team on my side, I've been reading a lot of scripts and there's good stuff out there. You know, we don't live in a world where like the mid-range, you know, adult drama budgets are great or even existent probably. But, you know, good stuff can always be made.
So when you're reading scripts through your management, is that stuff that are you like competing for those directing jobs or you're getting to read stuff just because people want to have meetings and they don't know what they want?
Yeah, it's more than anything, it's an exercise in nonsense right now. You know, my management team doesn't know what to do with me. Rightly so. I don't, you know, I'm a commercial director with no narrative work. They like me because of the company I'm at and the connections I have in the industry. Mm-hmm. But yeah, right now it's just an exercise. They're sending me scripts that are technically open directing assignments, but they're not putting me up for that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't expect them to. I told them I want to read anything and everything. So,
gotcha.
You know, it's more of a way to educate myself and to be aware of things than it is legitimate job opportunities.
Hmm. Who are the directors? I mean, in all your time of being a PA and then being an AD, are there people that you got to work with or have been around that have really inspired you?
Well, I mean, they're just people that I've gotten to work with that are great filmmakers. There's no like hidden secrets. You know, I think that's redundant. I think, you know, great filmmakers are known, you know. I got to PA for Jonathan Glazer, who is my like number one.
Okay.
Like I love that guy. And probably has played the biggest part in inspiring me, and you know, if I had to say one guy that's who I want to be, it would be him. But you know, a couple weeks ago hanging out with the Russo brothers. I mean, these dudes are epic guys that could not be nicer, you know. I'm trying to think. You know, I worked with a ton of great commercial directors when I was PAing. And also, you know, I also got to work with Steven Meisel, who's a really famous fashion photographer, for a couple years. It's amazing to be around these guys because there's still something mystical about this craft. They're working with all the same pieces that every other filmmaker is working with, but it's genius. You know, how are they doing that? You can be on set, you can be standing right next to them, and you can still try to figure it out. So, but yeah, Glazer's at the top of that list as far as just my personal on set. I got to be, I worked on the video he did with Jack White and Mosshart. What was that band they had together?
The Dead Weather?
Yeah.
Dead Weather. Wow.
But it was that video where they're shooting each other with machine guns. It's a cool video.
What impact, if any, would you say that your faith has had on your work experience specifically? Or your just your experience in Hollywood?
I mean, it's a little bit of a loaded question because I don't know what... I think everyone views their relationship with God and their relationship with their legacy or their purpose differently.
Mm-hmm. You obviously see God's hand in the steps, the things that have happened in your life, and you mentioned it being miraculous, so these things that happen one by one, like, does that... How does that make you feel about what you're doing?
Well, I do believe that there's purpose on my life, but to frame this in a way that might encourage someone else, I'm not sure that God cares about what you're doing. I think he might want to just bless people that have faith and want to step forward in confidence. Obviously, I'm not talking about a stripper. Mm-hmm. Although strippers are cool. But I'm saying, I think blessing follows those that get out of their house and go do something. Faith and action hand in hand. you know, I don't think that those two things can exist separately. Mm. And this is something that I have to constantly remind myself. It's scary. It's easy to sit in my house. You know,
mm-hmm.
The zone I'm in right now is like, do I go spend $75,000 on a short film?
Mm.
It's easier to get a coffee and think about it than it is to do it. And the question is the same. Should I do it? Yeah. What else is there? And I think that that's where blessing comes, is by those that get out and do it and seek to find purpose and favor. And I think God will bless you if you get out of your house and do that.
Hmm.
You know? Yeah. I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah. Do you have any, just, I don't know, final thoughts on from your experience to now, and what you would recommend, or any advice you have for other people that want to be doing what you're doing?
I want to be encouraging. You know, I do think that persistence is key. You know, I think that the lesson I learned in Dallas is something that I constantly have to remind myself of, and I think that's important. You have to be the hardest working person you know.
Yeah.
I think a big thing for me is relationships as well. I think you need to be around other people that are doing what you want to do, to learn from them, to be encouraged by them. And I think the movie business is amazing. And I think there's an enormous amount of opportunity for someone that wants to be in it. If we're talking about directing, if we're talking about filmmaking, I have no idea. You know, if you don't have something to say, if you don't know that you can be the best, if you don't have that type of ego and that type of thick skin, then I think you need to reevaluate. You know, there's no easy path in any area of life, but this one for sure, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. Learn and be around good people, and then work really hard.
Yeah.